Session number 943.
Captain Finch, Reel 1. How did you come to join the army in the first place, Captain Finch?
I was working at a butcher's, a friend of my father's, at Leytonstone. And my school pal came on this Monday morning and said he was going to join the army. I said to him, wait for me, I'm only working till 12 o'clock, I'll come with you, but I am not going to enlist. But when we got to Stratford, the recruiting sergeant inveigled me till I enlisted with my friend.
So you weren't really all that keen?
No, not till then.
Why weren't you so keen?
I'd never thought of joining the army.
What was it that put you off a bit?
Well, a very happy employment with my father's friend. But I suppose I didn't like losing my old friend and enlisted with him. And the following day, we went up to Beverley in Yorkshire to join the regiment they had posted me to, the East Yorkshire Regiment.
What did you think to joining the East Yorkshire Regiment, because you'd never had any connection with that part of the world?
I never really thought anything of it, except they made us very welcome when we arrived, and we arrived late in the evening, and they gave us a good cup of tea and some sandwiches and that, because we'd come all the way from London. And from then onwards, I settled down very well. And within 5 months, I was made a Lance Corporal. And within just over the 12 months, I was made a full corporal. And went over to Ireland, and to a place called Mullingar. And Mullingar, and after about a 12-month Mullingar and being on detachment at Longford and other places, I was posted back to Beverley as a instructor in the school. I had already had a course on the Curragh of education, and therefore I became a educational instructor. And I stayed at Beverley from 1922 to 1924, teaching some of the time and some of the time training recruits.
What had your job been before you went into the army?
I had had two jobs after I left school. One was in the post office, and I didn't like the enclosed after being born on a farm. So I left and joined and went to work for my father's friend at a butcher shop in Leytonstone.
And later on, you found yourself in China.
Well, the China came about by I left the depot, went on to Lichfield to join the 2nd Battalion of the East Yorkshire Regiment, where I was made promoted sergeant straight away. I then was given leave before going abroad, and I got married, and we went from Lichfield to Tinsin, North China. And there again, I went in the school, and sometimes I was out training with the men. My wife joined me out there, and we was in Tinsin, Peking, Tongshan, where the mine trouble has been on, and then after 1929 we left North China, came down to Shanghai, got on a P&O boat, called in at Hong Kong, then on to India.
And can we go back to when you heard about the posting to India? When you heard that you were going to go to India, what was your reaction to that? Were you pleased or not?
Oh, yes, because, in those days you used to look forward to going to a new station. It was very, very, you knew you were going to see something that you hadn't seen before. And when we got to India, we travelled right across India to and up in the hills, which is 75 miles from Dehradun, right up to 7,500 feet high at the hill station, Kalana. And that's where I was employed as a clerk in the order room.
Going back to the trip from China to India, you hadn't gone out in a troop ship because you hadn't travelled with your battalion originally.
Coming from China to India, we travelled on a P&O boat. That was from Hong Kong, because we'd come down on what they call a river boat from Tongshan to Shanghai, and then we got on to this P&O boat, which called in at Hong Kong, and came on to Bombay. Mauritania.
What was life like on this P&O liner?
Very good, very good. And of course, between yourselves, you made up sporting, deck tennis and things like that, and you really had a good time on it.
So you weren't bored?
Oh, no. Never bored any day of time. And there's plenty of reading material and books. But you also, if you was that way inclined, since I was in those days, you organised games. Deck tennis and all things like that.
Was there a lot of class distinction on those P&O boats in those days?
On those days there was the first, second and third. And I noticed it more on the civilian boats than the army boats, that they kept away from one another, although there was no, what can I say, you never saw any ill feeling between them. Because on the army boat, the only distinction was the officer side and the other rank side. In fact, even in the other ranks, the sergeants and the WOs had their own areas, which they kept in, but they also had their own platoons to look after, and there was never any animosity between them.
How long did the trip take from China to India?
About 3 weeks. Called in at
Singapore?
Singapore, Penang, and Ceylon.
Did you go ashore at those places?
Oh, yes, for a day. We all went ashore for, a day. I used to stay about a day at those places.
And what did you do?
Oh, walk around and, buy things, curios and things like that. Yes.
And when you arrived at Bombay, what was your first impression of India? Did you like the look of it?
Well, Bombay, we didn't see much of it. You see, we went straight from the port to the station that was very close, and then direct onto the train. And of course the train journey was, might as well say, boring, but although it was new country, you was interested in looking out the windows to see where you was going. The only thing is, it was so darn hot that you wasn't used to, although China used to get hot, you wasn't used to the Indian heat. But it was beautiful when you got as far as, let's say, Dehradun, to go up to Jakarta in Kalana. And there it was more like English summer.
When you arrived at the hill station, what was the first thing that you did?
So straight away go and see the man in charge of all the furniture and all like that, and get your quarters fixed up, your married quarters, because you had a house. Well, it's in a house, it's in a block, and you got all that fixed up with furniture and one thing or another. And of course, in those days, you had several boxes of your own with knick-knacks in to make up your house so it looked decent when you put it all out. But they just look after you very well in the quarters. And of course then there was the ration stores as well, where you could get the bare rations, meat, bread, which was issued in those days. And then there was the canteen, which is run by Indians, where you could buy anything, you same as you could at home, really, in the shops.
So were you living in a house or in a bungalow at Kalana?
It was a bungalow at Kalana. No upstairs, it was all flat. There was one long block along the top of the hills, and it was one long part of it, and you had, I think, four rooms. They were very, very comfortable. Some of them only had two rooms when I was in a couple. Just one was a scullery, a big living room, and a bedroom.
And were there just the three of you
the baby
living?
And my wife and I.
So, and the baby was how old?
Oh, 4 months, I suppose, 4 months, like that.
Did your wife look after the baby? Or?
Yes, yes. And up there you got, you could get a consama, as they used to call it. That's a native woman to look after your baby. And you could also get a babaji, as we used to call them, which was an Indian cook to do your cooking for you. All we got was a babaji, because we didn't want to choose a wife and look after the baby herself.
And so you just had the one servant, the babaji,
yes,
did you?
Yes, the babaji, yes.
And was that a man or a lady?
Man. Your young lady's got the photo of him.
And what was his name? Did you know his name?
Oh, I forget.
Did you call him by his name, or did you call him Babaji?
No, we should call him by his name, but I forget now.
Was he a Hindu or a Muslim?
He was Muslim. Muslim, yes. And, as I say, he's got a photo.
And did it cause any problems, the fact that of his religion being
no,
a Muslim?
No, we had no bother with the Indians in that way at all.
So would he cook any kind
He'd
of food for you,
yes.
Including pig meat?
Yes. Oh, yes, we had no, there was never any trouble that way at all with servants.
How did you get this servant?
They'd come round looking and they saw somebody else come for the first time into the quarters, had come looking for a job, you see, or somebody who knew you, probably there before you, knew you were coming, would get hold of him for you and keep him for you, so when you come you had a cook straight away. Very good that way. Even another regiment would, if they were leaving, would hand over their servants very near hand them over to you.
Did he have references?
No, I never used to bother with those, no.
Did you keep the same servant throughout the Italian?
While we were there we had our same cook the whole time. In fact, when I left India, I went from a plane station up into the hills to Chakrata to collect my wife and baby to come back to England. When we came down again, caught the train and was coming to Bombay, passing through the station near my old station, my old cook was there with parcels of cakes and sandwiches for my wife and I. And I never knew he was coming to say goodbye.
So you were very sorry to part from him?
Yes.
And did you find that he was a good servant?
Oh, yes. I was trying to think how much I gave him. I know in pocket gave him a nice bit. As he came on the station, I didn't realise he was going to be there.
And did you find that he did his work well?
Oh, yes. Of course, I know some people have been running for you or treating them. Very, very seldom. On the whole, the native servants with the army were very, very good. They were really good, especially if you treated them well.
Did you know personally of any cases of soldiers ill-treating servants?
I've only known one when, you know, somebody's used their hand and boxed one's ears, and straight away he's been in front of the commanding officer for it.
And punished, was he?
Yes. It's a very severe crime, by the way, that used to be. It used to be a very severe crime, ill-treating a native in the country in which you were serving. It was looked on very, very severely.
And was your servant trustworthy?
Oh, yes. Never no bother with them at all. Very good.
Who did the shopping?
My wife, maybe. There was a canteen there, because it was natives used to run it, although it was in Nafi. Not Nafi, sorry. It was a big Indian company. Had these Nafis and they had their own servants, but I mean they all spoke English, and the only difference was they were darkies. But we also used to go down to the bazaars and buy different things, because you could get a lot of things down there and very cheap.
So your wife shopped for the food as well, did she?
Oh, yes.
Or did she leave that to the
only
servant?
We used to get a certain amount of food issued. Meat, bread. But not much more, and used to buy all the other, and used to, as I say, used to go down the bazaar and buy it, the prime, you see, with the kiddie, and I've gone down many a time as well, shopping.
The bread and the meat that was provided by the army, you mean it was delivered to your door?
No, you only collected it at the butcher shop in the regiment, and you all cut up with your meat and because everybody's name used to be on each piece, and we made sure that, you know, you got everybody's name down. And bread as well from the bakery. It was cooked there.
Could you choose the meat that you wanted, or was
No, they used to. You had what was given you, really. According to your rations, you see.
And did you have to pay for this?
No. No, that was the issue.
So, going to the bazaar, you only had to get extras to supplement?
Yes. The troops, you see there, who were not in quarters, were in barracks, they used to get all the rations, all the food free. Everything free. Of course, nowadays, they don't do that. They have to pay so much out of their wages, and then they get the food.
What style did this Indian cook in? Did he cook Indian-style food or British-style food?
Oh, British-style, on their own stoves, as you might say, with their own pottery. He used to cook it very well. And I always thought they made a better curry than our English people. And, you know, yes, some were very, very good.
So he cooked both Indian and British-style
food?
Yes. Can we talk about the work that you were doing in India? Was the training that was done the same as the type of training which you had in England, or were there some differences?
Practically the same, except where you were training to go, say, up to Razmak, you trained for hills instead of plains, level grounds. Of course, there was no trenches or anything like it in those days. But you did a special, I went up the year before we went up to Razmak to learn it from the King Shropshire Light Infantry with four others, five of us all told. And we came back and we was in the battalion at different places training our men on the same lines as what we'd learnt up with the KSLI, King Shropshire Light Infantry. And to say that was the only difference in the training. We trained for mountain warfare, as we called it.
What type of things did you learn in this mountain warfare training?
Well, to make the use of the ground more than anything else, especially for cover. It's different to what it was on the plain. On the plains, probably you'd have to dig a bit of a trench, where you used to make use of the hill trajectory. And when you were out on marches up in the frontier, you put out pickets on the hills in front of you. They went out before you got there, and they was all numbered, and they were pulled in behind you as you went through. And the way that was done was with a big red flag, and one to the left was a 10, to the right was a single. So one to the left and four to the right was number 14 picket. And that picket would, if you signalled it, come in.
And were you ever ambushed or sniped at whilst you were working on the frontier?
We were never ambushed or sniped when we was on the move. But we were fired at one night in a place called
It's all right, we won't worry about the name.
The last station before you on the, as you go up to Razmak on our way up, and there was five rounds fired into the camp after dark. Three hit mules and one hit our RSM, Joe Kershaw, and killed him on the way up. So we lost our RSM.
You've got a story, haven't you, about how it came to be that this RSM was killed instead of yourself?
Yes, it was very, very sad, really. I had been the company sergeant major, ordered the tents to be put up in a certain way, 180-pound tents for the men, and two 80-pounders, one on the left for myself and the order room quartermaster sergeant, one on the right for the for the RSM and RQMS, and one on the right for myself and the order room sergeant. And the RSM came to me a quarter of an hour before dark and asked me would I change tents because the other one was handier for the orderly sergeants to come and get their detail from him, they'd find him easier. So I said right, and we changed tents. We got our batman to move our bedding from one tent to the other. About a quarter of an hour after dark, these rounds were fired, five rounds were fired into the camp. Say three hit mules, and one hit the RSM and killed him. And if I hadn't changed tents, it would probably been either myself or my RQMS. And I've brought the photos with me, and the photo of the funeral next day at Razmak.
So he was buried at Razmak?
Buried at Razmak, yes.
Inside the cantonment?
Yes. The camp where they used to have one British regiment and two Indian regiments, together with some transport.
Which Indian regiments were stationed at Razmak with you?
Well,
the East Yorkshire
used to
whilst
change
you were
over, you see. First would be the Punjabis, and then there would be the in fact, there was two or three battalions of the Punjabis used to come and change over, because we was only there for the 12 month. And they was all very friendly, and we used to play hockey with one another together, and no worry. Outside of Razmak, there are three big hills. We've had a lot of hills, but there's three big ones together. In one, and they used to call them the Three Sisters.
And how did the British soldier get on with the Indian soldier?
Oh, very well. Never any bother. He didn't used to, go about with them. But they used to meet them on the sports field, either annual sports or combined sports, tug of war, but mainly at hockey. And of course the Indian regiments were very, very good at hockey, there's no doubt about it.
So there were no instances of conflict or rivalry between the Indian and British soldier?
No, never heard of one.
Were you ever stationed alongside the Gurkhas?
The Gurkhas were in Lucknow when we were there, and that was the only station really where we were together. But then we were probably a mile apart, the two different stations. And of course, in Lucknow, the camp is not the same as you would think of any army camp. It was so spread out. Our own camp was practically a mile long, with A company at the bottom and A quarter company up at this end, and companies in between, as much as 200 or 300 yards from the huts, or not huts, big buildings of one company from another. The same with married quarters. They were another, a long distance away from one another. It's marvellous how far apart they were, really, for one camp. Yet, camps at other places were a lot closer than that. But there were none of them with walls round or anything like that. They was all open, so you could drive through them.
What did you think of the Gurkhas?
Very good. Very good. They are noted to be very good, and very good soldiers. They are, always have been. And, I mean, you see people talking about the Gurkhan knife, big one, but you never had any bother with them, whatever, because you was always careful not to, break their laws, if you kind of, for their upbringing.
You said that you didn't mix socially with the other Indian troops.
No.
Did you mix socially with the Gurkhas? Did they?
No, not socially.
Did you drink together?
No, you never did. They had their own places and you had yours.
Did you ever have any joint training exercises with the RAF?
Not in those days, no. No. Actually, I never saw a plane in those days.
You never saw a plane in India?
No.
Did you ever see any RAF personnel in India?
Not in India in those days.
What did you think to the quality of the officers with whom you were working in India?
It couldn't have been more wonderful. I have just come back a month ago. I only came back because of bad weather. And I visited 7 of my old officer army friends of India days. Some are now parsons, and they're all retired. Colonel Moorabbanad down near Fair Oak, but a wonderful, he's a very rich man, in fact.
What was his name?
Moorabbanad. I stayed with him 8 days. He made me stay with him 8 days last year for a holiday. And I've just called him lately and had lunch with him. You'd never think he was the rich man he is. And I know his wife's father was an admiral. They used to have a big house and a servant. But he's just like you or I. And he's really a gentleman.
Why did you think that the officers were so wonderful in India?
Well, although they were officers, they were always, even though, I mean, in the other ranks, you had some who came out of, say, poor homes.